So the not quite an apostle, but the apostolic figure, James. So a few weeks ago, I was talking about the circumcision question, and James, the brother or cousin of the Lord who presided over the Jerusalem church, that's presumably who wrote this particular letter. And he brings out an old image from the Old Testament of sin and its impact. And he calls himself, who knows, adulterers. And it's a very powerful image, that to say that sin is adultery is jarring, especially for any one of us who've either seen it, gone through it, or felt it, or whatever. It's one of the most horrifying images that truly comes up. But what it's meant to evoke is Israel's understanding that God gave himself to his people. He gave himself to his people freely as an act of love. In the same way, if you read those stories about how a prince finds a beautiful woman who is a total pauper, and he lifts her up and then brings her into his own household, and then without any kind of manipulation gives her the full title and dignity of his wife without treating her as if she were subordinate. And then Israel then develops the story and says, but then the result is that she takes the money and leaves the man. And that, frankly, is exactly what sin is. In fact, one of the major conversion moments in my life was when I read the book of the prophet Ezekiel, where he describes in graphic detail an allegorical image of this particular transaction in human history. But the really interesting thing is if you speak to an unrepentant adulterer, the excuses that come out of their mouth are amazing. And it comes to the point where you just look at the person and you just think, what can I possibly do to even talk to this person? Because you could say, do you not understand that you've hurt your wife or your husband? Yeah. Do you not understand how this might hurt your children? And then sometimes it even comes out where they'll say, it's like, well, you know, you can't fight your feelings. It's like, what? Do you honestly understand what you're saying? And you can't even figure it out. That difficulty is what we see in today's gospel with Jesus. Because all of us have been so harmed by the world and by sin that we see evil every day and we get complacent with it because it happens so much we don't think very much of it. And a good example would be people my age and younger. They don't even understand, generally speaking, what a love commitment means. If the emotions are gone, the commitment is gone. And one of the most horrible things to grow up with as a child is to not have somebody who is willing to go to the end for you. To know that no matter what happens, no matter how stupid you are, mom and dad will take you back. Or no matter how stupid husband or wife might be, that there is forgiveness, there's work called penance. There's work, but that there's a commitment there. And that even if there's a break in the relationship, that there's still a commitment, even if it's beyond, to say, I wish for this person's good. All of these images are carried over in our Christian life, and in fact, that's exactly how one could even understand so much of Israel's salvation history. God had a massive breakup with humanity at the fall, where humanity and God just... the whole thing got kind of torn apart in the garden. And it was irreconcilable. They couldn't live in the same house anymore. That God says, okay, you got to go. I will prepare for you a house. I will buy you a new place. You have to live over there. You can't live here because it will do you more damage than good for you to stay in this house. So go off. And then all of the covenants are God's like phone calls where he calls his ex. He calls his estranged spouse and says, maybe we should get together. They have a few good dinners together, but then all of a sudden, out of insecurity, she says something to him because she feels bad about herself, and it just makes the whole relationship go awry. So he says, okay, again. And there's only so many gifts that you can give before the relationship can't be healed anymore. He gives her a ring, or then he gives her a new thing, or then he offers her a type of reconciliation. It goes on and on and on. The whole image about Christ coming in the flesh is that this is God's last-ditch effort. He comes literally naked and vulnerable and says, I've given you everything, all I have is me. And the story is that even then, and in, to paraphrase one of the parables, let's kill him and take his stuff. Let's kill him and take the inheritance. That is the interior tragedy of the Passion, that he loves so much, he is willing to give so much, and it's a brick wall. And that's also why the image of the resurrection should be so inspiring and hopeful for us. That marriage bond that he made, that he promised from the very beginning of creation, he never gave up. He never, ever gave up. And in fact, he's fighting for our hearts even still. Which is why when James says, when you love the things of the world, you are an adulterer. It doesn't mean that you don't have to love good food or anything like that. And his be miserable is slightly hyperbolic. What he's saying is don't get your consolations from this world. Enjoy them, but know that they have limits. And then let God be your joy. Let him give you the gift of happiness. Let him give you the gift of joy. Don't try to find them in these things. And that leap of trust is very difficult, especially when we've harmed the person we love. And we all know this. We all know how hard it is to say I'm sorry to someone we know and love and trust. This is basic human experience. We just need to apply it to our basic religious life. And realize this is why it's so hard to pray. This is why it's so hard to be authentic in my Christian life. This is why it's so hard to be authentic with other people. I'm always afraid of being scorned and rejected. Which is why when Jesus tells us to, in fact, welcome the little child, we both think it's a nice teaching. And when there's the child in the church who's driving us nuts, we get angry. Our hearts are divided. And God knows it. One of the most important other elements of the incarnation is that there is no temptation that is in our heart that God does not understand. And if there's anything that truly evokes the sense of romance in our Christian life of prayer, is to know that no matter where we are, our beloved wants to find us. That no matter what tower or castle we might be imprisoned in, that he will seek us out. But more importantly, he doesn't just want a damsel in distress. I don't want to just stop with that oversimplified image. God doesn't want us to be standing in a castle and going, oh, woe is me, I need some man to help me. Oh, what am I going to do with myself? Blah, 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 blah. Nuh-uh. The very reason that he gives us this mission in this world is so that if the captor has captured all of us, then we can grab the weapons from within the castle itself and destroy it from within as he attacks from without. That the whole point of us living in this world is to participate in what God has done. If it were simply a matter of us getting into heaven, then he would have done that right away. He would have peeled back the universe right away. He would have ended all of suffering. He would have ended all of pain. He would have ended all the difficulties, including marital infidelity and all the stuff that comes with it. No. He gives us the grand compliment of saying, I am going to Jerusalem to suffer and to die. And I want to share this with you. Because it's not as if he's inviting us to something that we wouldn't have to go through. the exact opposite. He knows that no matter what happens, no matter how much money we accrue, no matter how many worldly gifts we have, no matter how much love we gain in this world, death still claims every one of them. There is no escape from death. And so because he loves us, he died with us. But because we have died with him, we hope that we will rise again with him. So, when he challenges you to let go of all of your possessions and to find the true value that is within you through the gift of baptism, where God said, I am married to you, I will never leave you alone, and you're operating out of that fear, when you have that fear that comes up that says, yeah, I know, but if I live the faith authentically, then people won't like me, ditch it. Pray in the quiet of your heart for the great romantic. He'll fight for you, but he wants you to fight for him.